IP provided education and training needs and objectives. The learning environment in healthcare settings is unique because of the diversity of HCP, who are likely to be of various ages, cultural backgrounds, ethnicities, educations, and learning styles. The basic principles of adult learning apply to the IP in the role of clinical educator with all types of HCP. These principles apply in a variety of clinical settings. Healthcare's complexity and the speed with which changes to guidelines and recommendations are at times introduced means that training activities must also address issues of literacy, cultural diversity, cross-training, and technological advances. For a healthcare education program to be successful, it should be informed by up-to-date learning theories and the educational needs of the learner population, the institution, and the community. IPs must also develop adaptive and innovative education strategies to reflect changing needs, situations, regulations, and priorities. IPs should provide a welcoming climate for learning, and they should also demonstrate creativity and flexibility in their approach. IPs need educational expertise to assist HCP in developing their critical thinking skills to prepare them to provide the best and safest care possible for residents, visitors, other staff members, and themselves. Because healthcare is such a heavily regulated industry, facility administrators must ensure organizational compliance to minimize the threat of litigation or heavy fines for regulatory noncompliance, while also emphasizing to HCP that their actions reflect the organization's values. Mandated training can, though, present a challenge to many learning styles. Key point: though much of the discussion herein focuses on educating HCP, it is crucial for IPs to remember that one of their principal responsibilities is to educate residents, their visitors and families, and other facility staff. As these individuals change daily and aren't subject to training mandates, the strategies used to reach them will vary and may heavily feature passive means of education, such as the use of educational posters in resident care areas and freely available printed information in lobbies and waiting rooms. Information can also be shared via communication tools and education guides for staff to use with residents, families, etc., and during rounding. Multimodal strategies should be implemented whenever possible. However, this should not be misconstrued to mean that providing education to residents, visitors and family members, and other non-HCP individuals is less important. On the contrary, such efforts form a key part of the IP's daily duties. Specifically, IPs should work to create an environment where residents are aware of HAIs, feel empowered, know to clean their hands often, understand the basics of safe injection practices, know to monitor the cleanliness of their area, are prepared to ask questions about their medications, know how to practice good post-surgical care, understand how to care for their devices, have a plan to stay up to date with their vaccinations, know that they can always ask to speak with an IP. Successful leaders recognize that to succeed in today's environment, healthcare institutions must train their employees to perform at their best while still recognizing the importance of workforce diversity. HCP may include part-time and temporary staff, contract labor, students, and volunteers. All are encouraged to acquire new knowledge and, in turn, share their experiences and expertise with others. Educators routinely use benchmarks to demonstrate the positive influence of educational interventions on staff performance, track performance outcomes, and measure the effectiveness of training programs. In some facilities, performance appraisals indicate the expectations for staff regarding the mastery of certain IPC skills. With the increased emphasis on facility report cards and public reporting of HAIs, more facilities are likely to include HCP compliance with IPC policies and procedures as a performance appraisal component. As new problems arise, for example, COVID-19 bioterrorism, HCP must devise new solutions to address them. As such, it is important that the education and training program properly prepare HCP by providing them with the knowledge and training necessary to appropriately respond to novel threats. To address these increasing demands, IPs must develop new evidence-based practices and strategies that can be readily adapted to the learning needs of their audiences and their facilities. Teaching goals and objectives. Educators control the learning experience by using a well-defined plan guided by goals, objectives, and appropriate teaching methods. Goals are statements that communicate the intent of the curriculum and provide a direction for planning the education session. Expectations should be clearly defined in terms of time and available resources. Key point. Underpinning all educational efforts and their goals and objectives are three intrinsically related areas: knowledge, skills, and competency. While closely related and occasionally used interchangeably, it is important to understand the relationship between the three terms and how they set the foundations of all educational attempts. The Oxford Dictionary defines knowledge as facts or information acquired by a person through experience or education, the theoretical or practical understanding of a subject. It also is described as awareness or familiarity gained by experience of a fact or situation, and skill as the ability to do something well, expertise. In other words, knowledge refers to familiarity with factual information and theoretical concepts, while skills are the practical application of that knowledge. Both knowledge and skills are necessary, then, to achieve a particular goal. Note that a given skill may be described as either a hard skill, which generally refers to technical skills, or a soft skill, which generally refers to social skills. Meanwhile, the APIC text defines competency as the skills, knowledge, and the mindset necessary to achieve effective job performance. Competency-based training contains elements that detail the specific outcomes or job expectations as indicated by the trainee's role, the work setting, professional standards, and regulations, as well as best practices in the field. Taking these three definitions together, the relationship between them becomes clear. In terms of IPC, knowledge is understanding what task should be done and why. Skills are the aptitudes for accomplishing a given task. And competency, which is the ultimate goal of many educational efforts undertaken in support of the IPC program, is the combination of both coupled with the desire to perform tasks consistently and correctly. Once the purpose of a program is established, the educator will determine the specific actions that the learner should be able to perform after receiving instruction. These actions are known as instructional objectives. Properly written instructional objectives describe learner outcomes in measurable terms and use action verbs such as discuss, describe, demonstrate, compare, or evaluate. In general, learning outcomes for HCP should include increased competence in identifying problems, critical thinking, managing existing situations, coping effectively with stress. Another vital teaching objective is to match the training to the audience. For this, the IP must consider a number of factors, such as the genders, cultural backgrounds, and ages of their audience together with the organizational culture. These can impact the choice of methods used, oral versus written and formal versus informal, for instance. Other considerations include the accessibility of information, communication channels, clarity of message, flow control and information load, and methods to measure teaching effectiveness. One way to set better teaching objectives for a specific educational session is to use Bloom's taxonomy. Bloom's taxonomy. Educational psychologist Dr. Benjamin Bloom created a taxonomy to promote higher forms of thinking in education, such as analyzing and evaluating, rather than just remembering facts. Rote learning, the taxonomy that bears his name has subsequently been adapted and updated by others. It is a taxonomy of learning behaviors that can be thought of as the goals of the learning process. That is, after instruction, learners should have acquired new skills, knowledge, and attitudes. Bloom's work identified three different domains of adult learning: the cognitive, mental skills, the affective, feelings or emotional skills, and the psychomotor, manual or physical skills. These domains are then further divided into subdomains, starting with the simplest behavior and progressing to the most complex. These subdivisions are not absolutes. They were last updated during the 1990s. And there are other educational and training systems or hierarchies, but Bloom's is the most accessible. Exhibit 3-19 shows the most recent version of Bloom's taxonomy. Exhibit 3-19, Bloom's taxonomy. Starting from the simplest behavior at the bottom to the most complex at the top, each of these learning behaviors can be tested with a simple question: remembering. Can the learner recall or remember the information? Understanding. Can the learner explain ideas or concepts? Applying. Can the learner use the information in a new way? Analyzing. Can the learner distinguish between the different parts? Evaluating. Can the learner justify taking a stand or making a decision? Creating. Can the learner create a new product or a new point of view? Adult learning principles. IPs should know how adults learn because they have special needs that must be accommodated. Characteristics of adult learners include the following. They are autonomous. They are self-directed. They have a foundation of life experiences and knowledge. They are goal-oriented. They are relevancy-oriented. Example, what is practical in healthcare settings? They need to be treated with respect. They typically have limited time to allocate to further education. When preparing an adult education program, it is important for IPs to synthesize evidence into an organized framework that learners can use to evaluate the evidence themselves in order to draw their conclusions. An organized framework that can be evaluated helps satisfy adult learners' needs for many of the above characteristics, such as autonomy, application of knowledge, and being goal and relevancy oriented. This can be described as providing evidence-based education, EBE. The foundation of EBE is analogous to evidence-based practice, EBP, in scientific literature. With this in mind, we'll examine how adults learn, using Knoll's adult learning framework, how to make learning sessions active, not passive, and what the differences in adult learning styles are. Then, we discuss the different ways to assess adult learners' educational needs. Knoll's adult learning framework. Malcolm Knowles, a leader in the field of adult education, has developed a framework describing how adults learn differently than children. Exhibit 3-20 shows key points. Exhibit 3-20, Knowles' adult learning framework. Active versus passive learning. Often, as IPs prepare an educational session, they think about what should happen in the session. It is easy to fall back on what is familiar, basically, the traditional pattern of lectures and discussions. By recognizing that adults learn in a variety of ways, IPs can expand their teaching skills beyond the traditional lecture and slideshow method. Significant learning requires new tools and new kinds of teaching and learning activities. IPs should understand and then learn how to incorporate more active learning into programs. Active learning is the concept that learners learn more and retain their learning longer when they acquire it in an active rather than a passive manner. Active learning involves learners in doing things in addition to thinking about the things they are doing. That is, learning is not a spectator event. It requires active engagement, which can include activities such as debates, simulations, guided design, small group problem solving, and case studies. While lectures and textbooks remain important, it is best to enhance them with some kind of experiential learning. Exhibit 3-21 shows how learning retention increases as one moves from passive to active methods. It also shows that both passive and active methods have subtypes that vary in effectiveness. Exhibit 3-21, Learning Retention. Source, adapted from a National Training Laboratories, Bethel, Maine, image. One common approach to balancing active and passive learning is to use the 60/40 rule. Active learning should account for approximately 60% of what is done by the learner, with the remaining 40% being comprised of passive learning. There are several strategies to consider depending on your audience and the purpose of your training. Some of the strategies are particularly relevant for diverse audiences. Active learning strategies include quizzes, games, role-playing. Example, role-playing could be incorporated by having participants practice talking to someone about non-compliance with HH. Brainstorming, group problem solving, case studies. Example, have learners tackle C, difficile scenarios taking into account TBP, the environment of care, and ways to promote optimal IPC. Simulation, example, create a simulation of an event, such as a MRSA outbreak in the healthcare facility, and practice responding to it. Technology is revolutionizing the way people are taught. Computer-based training enables employees to manage their time more effectively and to be more independent and self-directed learners. The proliferation of new media and digital formats can also enable different types of learners and audiences to collect materials presented in formats that are appealing and helpful to them, for example, podcasts, mobile apps, ebooks, reputable websites, webinars, and more. An important IPC training goal is to assess and make recommendations for technology. Learning styles. Awareness of a learner's learning style, for example, study alone, active participation, visual learner, assists both the adult learner and the IP in getting the most out of learning experiences. Learners are most successful when they are able to make connections between new knowledge and what they already know. This can be difficult, though, with mandatory education and training because of national, regional, or accreditation requirements. Key point: an assessment of the learner's learning style establishes the foundation for a personalized approach to learning. That is, for employing adaptive instructional strategies and making authentic learning evaluations. Assessing educational needs. By performing a needs assessment, the educator is able to ensure that an educational activity is relevant and reasonable for the target learner population. Study results will determine the interests of the group, their readiness to learn, their professional experience, and the cognitive differences in clinical reasoning. Findings can be used to develop course goals and objectives and to assess the efficacy and impact of the educational activity. Methods to determine the educational needs of the learner population include the following. Learner self-assessment. The learner develops a self-achievement model and compares the present situation to the accepted standard. Focus group discussion. Learning needs are assessed in small groups, with members assisting each other to clarify needs. Interest finder surveys. These are data gathering tools, such as checklists or questionnaires. Test development. Tests can be used as diagnostic tools to identify areas of learning deficiencies. Personal interviews. Random or selected individuals consult with the educator in order to determine learning needs. Job analysis and performance reviews. These methods provide specific, precise information about work and performance. Observational studies. Direct observation of HCP working can be performed by quality management analysts or IPs. Example, HH study. Review of internal reports. Incident reports, occupational injury and illness reports, and performance improvement studies can be reviewed to determine the specific learning needs of healthcare providers. Communication value. The value of good communication cannot be overstated. Dissemination of IPC information is a crucial component of an IPC program. Surveillance data and policy decisions should be communicated throughout the organization. Also, feedback from the monitoring/auditing of IPC standards should be provided to relevant stakeholders. This communication may be accomplished through routine written, including electronically, or verbal reports to clinicians, committees, and department heads. It is important to provide appropriate information to medical staff and administration as well as frontline HCP. Teaching styles. Individual teaching styles involve behaviors that have a direct impact on the teaching-learning environment. For example, making eye contact encourages learners to participate in the session. Positive facial expressions that elicit a positive learner response, such as nodding the head, can assist learners in feeling comfortable speaking in class, whereas negative gestures, such as frowning, can discourage learner participation. Vocal tone is very important and can easily portray underlying feelings and encourage or discourage learner participation. Most educators rarely use just one teaching style. Instead, they use a variety of styles, even in a single educational session, depending on the needs of their audience. This mixed approach appeals to the variety of learning styles and has been shown to improve learning outcomes. Reflecting on the type of style one uses most encourages self-understanding and may serve to improve teaching effectiveness. Grosch's classification defines the following teaching styles, all or any of which may be appropriate in a given session. Expert. IPs use their vast knowledge base to inform learners and challenge them to be well prepared. This can be intimidating to the learner. Formal authority. This style puts the IP in control of the learner's knowledge acquisition. The IP is not concerned with learner-educator relationships, but rather focuses on the content to be delivered. Demonstrator or personal model. The IP coaches, demonstrates, and encourages a more active learning style. Facilitator. Learner-centered, active learning strategies are encouraged. The accountability for learning is placed on the learner. Delegator. The IP role is that of a consultant, and the learners are encouraged to direct the entire learning project. Just-in-time training. Development and delivery of just-in-time educational programs may be necessary due to new or emerging strains of organisms, new policies or procedures, or new equipment. This type of training tends to be conducted out on the floor or unit. Also, education on infectious agents may be relegated to just-in-time training rather than as part of an ongoing program of continuing infectious disease education. The curriculum should include components that cover disease recognition, notification procedures, donning and doffing of PPE, transport considerations, cleaning and disinfection, and post-exposure follow-up. Various types of easily transported video recordings or streaming videos can be helpful for on-site, just-in-time learning situations. Subject matter experts need to have reviewed them and to have found that they are on the right subject, reflect the IPC practices of the facility, and are not out of date. Short video clips are helpful to demonstrate a point or to encourage group discussion. In-service training. In-service training is formal or informal work-related systematic training commonly delivered on-site in a group training session offered by the employer, though viral sessions or self-directed learning modules may also be used to provide continuing professional development related to HCP knowledge, skills, and behaviors. This can include educating HCP on aspects of their actual work, improving efficiency and effectiveness, ensuring awareness of the goals and benefits of current projects or programs, and providing updates or new guidance on technologies or therapeutic agents. HCP have annual in-service training requirements for various competencies. Continuing professional development. HCP must regularly invest in their own professional development. HCP, including the IP, should take the initiative to seek new knowledge, acquire certifications and new areas of licensure, or enroll in continuing education courses. Continuing education is defined as opportunities to acquire general or focused knowledge through lectures, discussion, or interactive methods. For example, HCP who are responsible for providing training to other HCP can use Train the Trainer programs. In such programs, leader guides are used to train those persons responsible for implementing a program. Certification and licensure differ. A certification is a standardized measure enabling a person to demonstrate a predetermined competency level deemed necessary for persons practicing IPC, while licensure is recognition by a governmental agency, for example, a state or provincial nursing or medical board, that an individual has met the minimum requirements to practice in the jurisdiction. Certification is overseen by non-governmental certifying bodies such as CBIC, while licensure is governmental recognition. Certification signifies that expertise has been attained in a specific field and that the certified individual has mastered the skills and knowledge required to practice competently in that field. Certification also goes beyond continuing education in that continuing education does not necessarily require a pre- or post-education assessment, but certification does. That said, continuing education that has been approved by a certifying body is typically required for recertification. Competencies and competency assessments. Effective workplace training initiatives are directly linked to the implementation of professional and regulatory standards as well as facility policies and procedures. IPs and healthcare professionals have expected competencies they must acquire in order to perform their duties correctly. The IP is responsible for developing a training program for HCP that is focused on competency-based skill development. Competencies detail the specific outcomes or job expectations as indicated by role, work setting, and professional standards and facility accepted benchmarks or best practices in the field. The focus is on the demonstration of individual competence by benchmarking rather than a comparison to fellow HCP or peers. For example, HCP may be required to demonstrate their abilities in assisted glucose monitoring and specimen handling. The benchmarking process also ensures ongoing evaluation and monitoring. To be successful, it is important that HCP be able to put new knowledge into practice and consistently apply this knowledge regardless of the setting. As referenced in ABIC Text 3, Education and Training, Xu et al. Asserted that competency statements are broad and need to be aligned with specific statements of activity or performance that are measurable. The same chapter notes that Corrico et al. Proposed the following measurable competency objectives. Describe the role of microorganisms in disease. Describe how microorganisms are transmitted in healthcare settings. Demonstrate SP and TBP for all resident contact in healthcare settings. Describe occupational health practices that protect HCP from acquiring infections. Describe occupational health practices that prevent HCP from transmitting infections to residents. Demonstrate ability to problem solve and apply knowledge to recognize, contain, and prevent infection transmission. Describe the importance of healthcare preparedness for a natural or human-made infectious disease disaster. Just as HCP should be engaged in ongoing education and training, so too should the IP be engaged in ongoing IPC education. Such education may be based on APIC competency model, which focuses on the following six domains: leadership. IPs use leadership skills to establish a clear vision for IPCPs throughout the continuum of care. Professional stewardship. The continuously changing world of healthcare and infection prevention requires dedicated stewards that allow the profession to develop, adjust, and uphold a respectable and reliable reputation. Quality improvement. A fundamental framework that IPs must use to systematically improve care and reduce infections within their healthcare setting and throughout the continuum of care. IPC operations. Highlights specific future-oriented competency content that crosses clinical, technical, and leadership subdomains. IPC informatics. Information and diagnostic technologies and their applications are rapidly evolving and highly dynamic. IPs must remain proficient in using and leveraging systems to input, analyze, extract, and manage data to support and drive data integrity, streamlining of processes, innovative IPC practices, and positive resident outcomes. Research. Research is an essential skill set that supports and advances the IPC field. Checklist-based competencies. HCP competency validation can take advantage of numerous checklists developed to validate specific HCP competencies. Exhibit 3-22 shows an example of a PPE competency validation. Note that the validation used here is a return demonstration. A return demonstration is an activity in which HCP demonstrate proper exercise of a given competency by performing the required processes as they were taught. This demonstration can occur after orientation, on an annual basis, or due to a specific need, such as an identified gap or breach in practice. Exhibit 3-22. PPE Competency Validation Checklist Example. Source: Infection Prevention and Control Essentials for Ambulatory Care, which cites CDC at www.cdc.gov/hai/pdfs/p/poster148.pdf. Competency audits, process surveillance and performance monitoring. Audits are direct observations of HCP practices in the healthcare setting, often facilitated using checklists. Audits, process surveillance, and performance monitoring are terms that are often used interchangeably. When conducting audits on IPC practices, for example, hand hygiene, the IP should also observe things such as glove use, not only to verify that they are used correctly, but also to confirm that incorrect practices, for example, wearing two pairs of gloves in lieu of HH, are not taking place. IPs should provide feedback to staff on their compliance with IPC practices and establish goals for improvement. Exhibit 3-23 shows a sample audit checklist for transmission-based precautions, TBP. Exhibit 3-23. Competency example for TBP. Caution must be exercised when doing observations to prevent the Hawthorne effect, a situation in which practice improves when participants are aware they are being observed. For example, HCP may more carefully comply with hand hygiene procedures when they are aware they are being watched. As such, it is important to use unannounced and unobtrusive methods to monitor practices such as hand hygiene. To do so, techniques such as a secret shopper can be used to observe and document hand hygiene compliance. Secret shoppers may be other HCP, social services, recreation, certified nursing assistants, or trained volunteers who are asked to observe and report on actual practices. Organizations may also train secret shoppers to perform just-in-time education, enabling them to offer immediate feedback to correct identified issues. Individual competence should be validated in advance. Evaluation of educational programs. Evaluating educational programs is done to determine learner progress toward achieving program objectives, effectiveness of the educational process in fostering learning, accomplishment of the institutional mission to prepare HCP for optimal IPC activities. Program evaluation is necessary to measure change and growth in the learner. To demonstrate efficacy and impact, data are collected from participants before, during, and after an educational program. Feedback should be shared with learners, managers, and facilitators to demonstrate progress made and inform improvements. Specific program elements that should be evaluated include the appropriateness of program design, the adequacy of teaching and instructional resources, the competencies, knowledge, skills, and attitudes learned by the participants, and the changes to practice. A representative sample of data from the learner population is necessary to provide evidence of successful learning. Evaluation methods include formative and summative evaluations. Formative evaluation is a training evaluation conducted during the planning of the educational session to provide immediate feedback and to allow appropriate changes to be made. Summative evaluation is a training evaluation that occurs after the program is completed to determine impact and overall effectiveness. Various methods can be used to determine learning outcomes and to assess the appropriateness of the material and whether learning has occurred. Examples include the following: data collected by pre- and post-tests, before and after an intervention, measure changes in individual or group understanding. Direct observation of practice identifies behavioral changes that are a result of the course. Example, demonstration of proper use of protective barriers. Exit questionnaires gather information about the overall success of the program, asking for feedback on all aspects of the course, including objectives, the presenter, the quality of teaching aids, and the learning environment. One-on-one interviews collect more in-depth information from participants regarding conceptual understanding or program design preferences. Follow-ups with appropriate supervisors and possible discussion sessions with the supervisor and the learner can help assess whether a change in on-the-job behavior has occurred. Whichever evaluation methodology is used, the data must be gathered, tabulated, and analyzed to assess impact and make recommendations for curriculum revision. Evaluation measurements must be consistent with the objectives established for the educational program,